Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of This Week in History. And this week we are joined by quite a very, I would say, famous author, to be fair, looking at some of the stuff he's done, Gabe Henry. Now, he's actually been the author of three books so far, including the poetry anthology and Eating Salad Drunk. Now, this is a humor collaboration with Jerry Seinfeld, Bob Odenkirk, and Mike Birbiglia, Margaret Cho, and other titans of comedy. Eating Salad Drunk was featured in The New Yorker in February 2022 and ranked one of Vulture's best comedy books of 2022. Henry's work has been published in The New York Magazine, The Weekly Humorist, The New Yorker, Light Poetry Magazine, and the Motion Picture Association's magazine, The Credits. He has spent more than a decade exploring the strange and forgotten history of simplified spelling, which, by his own admission, has only made him a worse speller. He lives and works in New York, and we are more than happy to welcome him to the show. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me today. Thanks for talking about your new book that you've got coming out. I want to know, before we get into the show, just a little bit about what made you write the book. Because it's, I get a lot of authors, and they're normally, you know, they're centered around a single person, or they're centered around an event throughout history. And when I got the email about this, and I just thought, wow, this is nothing like I've ever covered before. So yeah, I just want to know a little bit more about what made you write this, basically.
Yeah, well, it's not about one person. It's about a long, centuries-long movement. And I first learned about it in college. And I remember being struck, I guess, by the sheer silliness of the concept. You know, this idea that people were walking around in revolutionary times spelling though, T-H-O, and love, L-U-V, like some teenager with a smartphone. And it wasn't till many years later when I actually started digging into the movement and reading through the archives and the articles and the journal entries that I realized how rich and complex this movement actually was. And it attracted some extraordinarily unusual characters. And some of them were brilliant, and some of them were clearly out of their minds.
Yes.
But they all shared this belief that they could change society, at least in some small way, by changing the way we spell. So I wanted to bring these characters to life. And I wanted to also explore how some of the, you know, even the tiniest efforts to change our world, something as small as, say, you know, spelling laugh, L-A-F, can have these ripple effects throughout history.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool because, like, I mean, some of the stuff that you kind of alluded to it there, but it's like a teenager with a mobile phone. And I mean, my daughter, she's 13 years old, and I'm an advocate for spelling things correctly. Mm-hmm. And she hates me because she uses text language when she speaks. And I always message her and I'm like, no, spell it properly. Yeah. You need to spell this properly. You need to spell that properly. And it's amazing to think that the words, the way they spelt it now, is something that's been going on for sort of hundreds of years.
And you know what's funny is that I noticed the same abbreviated text speak with my parents. It's the cliche is that it's restricted to the youngest generation, the one that can't pull their eyes away from the phone. But to be honest, it catches on with all generations. And I also, pride myself on being a good speller, on taking the time and having the patience to type everything out. But I will catch myself typing T-H-O if it serves the moment and it brings a little bit more efficiency and speed into my communication. And that's really what the simplified spelling movement was based on, a way to bring speed and efficiency into English communication, which our spelling is the least efficient, one of the least efficient out of all the languages. It's the least consistent, and it also takes the longest to learn. So yes. In every which way, however you look at English spelling, you could You could enjoy it for the beauty of the words. You can study it for the historical origins, the etymologies of the words, and like it, and you can enjoy it. But as purely a form of communication, it is not the ideal way. And that's what
No.
these reformers were trying to bring out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I always sort of tried to explain to students when I was teaching and sort of throughout my podcast and then again to my children, things like the English language is probably the hardest to learn if you're not native to that country. And it's purely things like having three words that are all sound the same that are spelt differently, like though. Or
Exactly.
there, and there. And it's three completely different words all pronounced the same. They all mean completely different things. And I mean, I'm not a proficient in foreign languages, but I know from when I learned German as a child, and I don't ever remember there being silent letters in German.
German is considered one of the most consistent spellings, along with Spanish. Most languages in the world do have a pretty consistent spelling. And that's not to say they don't have their quirks. You know, Spanish, you go to one country and you pronounce V as a V, another country, you pronounce it as a B. But every language has quirks or regionalisms, dialects. English is really the only language in which you can have, a letter combination like O-U-G-H, and a child or an immigrant or even a someone who's been writing and speaking the language their entire lives won't know how to pronounce it unless they've kind of committed it to photographic memory. So in our spelling, in our language, we have eight different ways to pronounce O-U-G-H.
Wow,
And
I didn't know that.
you didn't know it. I didn't know it because I think we take it for granted.
Yeah.
We don't quite remember what it was like learning. There were certainly some moments where we tripped up on it. But you have words like through, though, tough, cough, bow, and it goes on and on.
Yeah.
I know in certain areas of England, I don't know if they still do, but hiccup spelled hiccough, that might be an older way of spelling
Yeah,
it,
I think that
but
might be. It's now HICCUP.
right, which would be the simplified version of that.
Yeah, but I mean, it's. I mean, I always find it weird because obviously talking to Americans quite regularly. I mean, my listener base is probably about 90% American, and we always get bogged down on certain words in this country that I mean we. I it sounds a bit sort of well very British when I say things like we invented the language and Americans have changed the language and I remember and I don't know if you came across this on your research but I keep getting asked how come Americans spell things differently to how we spell it like the word color for example we put a U in it and in reality there doesn't need to be a U in it and it's things like that and from my research that I found years ago and I'm assuming you can corroborate this if I'm right but Americans changed the way things were spelt when the printing press came out and this was because in places like New York and Washington when they were printing newspapers they charged per letter and I don't know if this is factually correct and I don't know if you can corroborate it but because of the fact that it was cheaper to drop certain letters and it still meant the same thing that Americans sort of adapted their language over time to sort of have an American version of English as well.
There is a certain money saving aspect to American ways of simplifying spelling. Newspapers in the 1800s definitely did simplify some words for the reason you're talking about. But I think that British and American spelling started to diverge in the 1800s, early 1800s, with Noah Webster. So he, words like color and favorite with the U, theater and center ending in ER rather than RE, word plow, we spell it OW,
OUGH. Yeah.
OUGH. These are all remnants of Noah Webster's efforts to simplify and streamline spelling. in the 1790s. So when he was about 27 years old, he came out with a new system of spelling. He published it in something called Dissertations on the English Language, and it was a radical overhaul of all spelling. And his idea was that it would help to set America apart from England after the American Revolution. So here was a new country, only a few years old. It had just declared its independence from its oppressor. No
Yes.
offense.
No, none taken.
And yet it was still speaking the language of its oppressor. And it did want to declare, in a sense, a linguistic independence as well. So Noah Webster, founding fathers posed different languages that we could adopt. Some posed French, some posed Hebrew, even. But it was Noah Webster who said, why don't we just change our spelling? It'll make our language more efficient, it'll make it more logical, and it'll make it more scientific because it'll make everything consistent. So he posed some spellings like the PH in word like physics, he would change to an F. He would also change the S letter to a Z. So he would spell FYZICS. He was the one who posed changing laugh to LAF, enough to ENUF. And he went through the whole language and he pitched this pretty radical overhaul. And predictably, he was mocked and ridiculed and kind of laughed out of the conversation because no matter how logical your system of simpler spelling is, it's always going to look funny on the page. The fact is, it's always going to look like a child is writing it.
Yes.
So he withdrew his proposal in the 1790s, and he spent the next 20 years writing his first dictionary, Webster's Dictionary, which was the first American dictionary. And it was larger than Samuel Johnson's dictionary. It was the ultimate encapsulation of American language at the time that came out in 1828. And what he did was he inserted in this stealthy way, he inserted his a few American simplified spellings. And this was his way of kind of, it's almost Trojan's horse. Yeah, Trojan's horse. I watched the Severance episode a few days ago, and now I can't remember whether it's Trojan horse or Trojan's horse. I think it's Trojan.
I think it's Trojan, yeah, without the S, but we.
So this was this is how he got words like color and favorite and honor to stick with the American audience. So, and to this day, we are still using those remnants.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Am I right in saying that Webster's dictionary is like your go-to dictionary at schools?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Oxford English Dictionary is still everywhere.
Hmm.
And then there are different versions of Webster's Dictionary because I don't know if you know this, but the name Webster's Dictionary lost its trademark about 100 years ago. And technically, you or I could publish Webster's Dictionary and there's no copyright issue. But
Really?
Webster's is the go-to. It's come to the point where the word Webster is just almost a byword for dictionary. You can
Yeah.
say, look it up in Webster's.
Yeah, I mean we like I said, we have literally the Oxford English Dictionary, and I think we've got the Collins Dictionary as well, which is another one. But I mean, essentially they're basically the same thing. I mean, I've never sat down and read through it, but I mean, I'm assuming they're pretty much the same. But I mean, I find it fascinating that I mean, in your book, you take this back to sort of like Benjamin Franklin and founding fathers and things like that, and it's not something I've ever. Like I said, when I was sent the sort of the blurb about the book, and I thought, this is not something I know very much about. I mean, I'm pretty well versed in history, but I'd never really thought about it. And I think it goes back to the fact that we do take the language for granted, and we don't necessarily know where these words come from. And over
And that's
here, I
the thing.
mean, a lot of it's made like from, I mean, a lot of our, or I mean, I'm assuming your English as well, but it's taken from such a long time ago. I mean, Shakespeare invented something like 500 words. Do you know what I mean? Just through his own plays. And it's.
Yeah, there's that's the interesting thing about a book on spelling is that it's an aspect of all our lives that we all take for granted, and it's universally used on a daily basis. And if we do look back at it and are curious about our spellings, yeah, we have, we'll look back at Shakespeare. We'll think back on like words with a French origin or words with a Latin origin, but not too many people think beyond that. And they certainly, by and large, most people don't think that the language is changeable. They s accept that there's three spellings of there. They expect that there's eight pronunciations of O-U-G-H, and they rarely are going to say, this is a silly thing we're doing. Why don't we change it? But this book is about those few people that did think, let's change it. We can with these people, like the founding fathers you mentioned, they were coming out of the Enlightenment, the scientific revolution, and this was a period where classification, reducing the natural world to like data. This was a big part of the beginnings of scientific inquiry. Of taking something complicated, like anything in the natural world, and turning it into a textbook, turning it into something that you can look up, turning it into a reference manual, a dictionary, a thesaurus, and kind of ch bringing the unquantifiable into a quantifiable book, a manual, something, a guide for us. These people thought if you could do it with the natural world, why can't you do it with language?
Yeah, and I mean it makes sense, and I find with like Americans, and this may be through pop culture and things like that, but I genuinely don't ever remember spelling being like a big thing in this country. I mean, growing up, obviously we had English teachers that would say, you spelt that wrong, or you spelt this wrong, or things like that. But in America, I mean, I say I'm taking this a lot from pop culture, things like The Simpsons and things like that, where you have literally a competition on how to spell certain words. And I mean, I find that fascinating because, I mean, we may have done it in schools at sort of like a maybe like a competition between two kids in school, but it was never on the, I mean, you do like national spelling bees and things
We
like
do a
that.
national spelling bee every year. The next one is in May, and it happens to be the 100th anniversary of our national spelling bee. And on a local level, America has been running local regional spelling competitions since the 1850s, at least. But anyone in America, I guarantee you ask them, and they'll tell you that they had school competitions, and they'll remember the word that they lost on, and it'll be an enduring source of shame. They'll remember exactly what letters they messed up. It's a very big competition, and it's
What was
done on a
yours?
stage, and it's not one-on-one. What was mine?
You've got to have one then. You've said it now.
I think the word was acquiesce. To this day, I don't know if I could spell that one for you. You want to give it a try?
Do you know what? I don't even think I could. AQU. No, I see this is what I mean. I'm not very good at acquiesce.
Well,
AQU.
you can edit this part out of your podcast.
Yeah,
You might lose.
AQUIEST.
It's I'm looking at it now. It's ACQUIESCE.
Yep, there you go. Oh,
So
right.
we can thank the French for that.
Well, we don't, that's another me and my dad. I don't know if you've listened to podcasts. A lot of the times I do them with my dad, and we have this big debate because we have the word lieutenant in this country.
What is
And
it?
it
Oh, lieutenant,
Yeah,
lieutenant,
and we
yeah.
call it lieutenant, and it's spelled exactly the same.
Yeah.
There's no difference between our spelling and yours.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
But we call them lieutenants, not lieutenants. And I genuinely don't know why.
apart from the fact the word's French and
I wish I had that answer for you. I think it has to do with the original pronunciation. It sounds like a French word.
yeah.
I'll have to get back to you on that. But we also have the word colonel, as in the military status, and that's spelled without an R. And that's, if we're gonna simplify our spelling, that might be a good place to start.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I mean, I like the you've got a point on one of the topics that you cover in the book is about the sort of like the crazy aspect where everything was changed from a C to a K. And I, again, it's not something I've ever really noticed, but like it's when you've given a list of certain examples. So you've got Kleenex. It's a brand of tissues. Never ever has it crossed my mind that that should be a C. We don't have Kool-Aid in this country, but again, I know, I'm aware of what it is. Krispy Kremes and things like that just they start with a K and they shouldn't. And I not really something I've ever thought about, but that sort of revolution that changed.
Well, linguists at the time, they had a term for that. They called it the craze for K, and they blamed it on the simplified spelling movement. And now we're talking around early 1900s. In 1906, simplified spelling kind of hit its peak with the Theodore Roosevelt, the U.S. president, embraced it very publicly. And for the next couple decades, simplified spelling then kind of entered the mainstream through the advertising industry, through marketing. In the 1920s, with the rise of Madison Avenue in New York City, advertisers began using creative and phonetic spelling to like name their brands, to catch attention, to set themselves apart, to draw in shoppers. And one of their techniques is, as you mentioned, was respelling hard the hard C with a K. And you mentioned those brands. And this continued well into the throughout the entire century. And we take it for granted, but this was a direct influence of the simplified spelling movement, which had been spelling words like character with a K and chorus with a K since the days of Noah Webster.
I mean, that's it. It's like I said, it's not something that I've ever really noticed, and I think that is, I mean, more of an American thing because when you look at the products like that we mentioned, like Krispy Kremes is American, Kool-Aid's American. I'm gonna guess that Kleenex is an American company. It's, I mean, we have it over here, but you know, Kit Kat, Nestle is American. So a lot of the products, I mean, we do have them over here. Krispy Kremes came over here about 20 years ago, and it was like the best thing that ever happened. And then about 3 years ago, we got Dunkin' Donuts, and I was like, yeah, okay, Krispy Kremes can sod off. So we sort of had this, we've had like this Americanization over here that's slowly coming over. And it's almost like, and it may be the ignorant British, but it's almost like when the things have come over, it's like, oh yeah, it's American, it's not spelt properly. It's that sort of a, it's not something we've ever looked at. I don't think anyone in this country has ever looked at it and gone, why are they spelling it differently? What's the reason for it? And I think they've just gone, well, yeah, well, they butchered our language. And actually, when you look at this book and you actually see there are genuine reasons as to why this has happened, it starts to make a lot more sense. So I think, I know, like I said, I know obviously majority of my listeners are American, but I think the British listeners of this will actually will benefit from this because it does explain a lot more.
Well, for most of the simplified spelling movement, for the first few hundred years, it was a niche reform interest, and it was restricted to education. It was thought of as something that teachers would like, writers would like, publishers. And it wasn't until we mentioned it came into the advertising industry that it really reached the mainstream and it spread. And it became associated with America. And, America has this idea of itself that it's always, on the frontier. It has this pioneer mindset. And this applied to language as well. Language was seen by many as just that next frontier for improving American society. And the advertising the infiltration of advertising by creative spelling, it also like lent itself. It also came into the world of pop music in the 50s and the 60s. Any industry in which you want to stand out from a crowd, maybe appeal to a younger, more rebellious audience, it has real relevance, real purpose. So in the 60s, you have bands like the Beatles spelled with an A, BEAT, the Birds spelled with a Y, the Monkees spelled without a Y, and you see it into the 70s with Def Leppard and U2, and it goes all the way to the present day. You just have to look at the Billboard charts to see it.
Do you know what? Again, you've mentioned there bands that I really like. Like, I mean, I'm not a huge Beatles fan, but again, I've never really thought about it that it's spelled BEAT, not BEE. Yeah, very, very strange that like when someone points it out to you, you do sort of notice and you sort of think, oh yeah, that is a bit strange and a bit different. And I like the fact that I mean, you can see it in certain songs as well, where people shorten like they'll use numbers instead of words for the word two and things like that. And it all sort of it's amazing to think that it all sort of stems from hundreds of years ago, when there was this like movement of simplifying the way the English language is.
I think that over the hundreds of years that the simplified spelling movement was trying to infiltrate American British culture. And again, it wasn't just American. There were British societies. The Simplified Spelling Society was formed, I think, around 1908, and it still exists. It just renamed itself the English Spelling Society, but their mission is the same. Their following is a lot smaller than it was. But over time, the simplified spelling movement, what I think it did was it softened our boundaries around traditional spelling, so that the common person, even if they weren't intentionally or consciously spelling things differently, they kind of absorbed it unconsciously that you could spell something incorrectly and people will still know what you mean. And over time, this just turned into another form of creativity. And I talk a lot in the book about the musician Prince, who in the 18th, he had a very distinct way of spelling. If you look through his albums, his discography, you'll see he replaced whole words with numbers and standalone letters, like "I would die for you" with the number four, the letter U. Nothing compares to you. And that was his distinct style. And I think that's where the trend caught on to spell. Today, you look through the top 100 hits, and you'll see there's going to be a few songs that are spelled with the letter U as in place of the word you. It didn't specifically begin with Prince. This form of writing had it was kind of a way of kind of a puzzle. It was a challenge for people in the 1800s. It would show up in newspapers, try to decipher this poem that has all these words replaced with numbers, see how you can do it. It was seen as a creative thing, but now it's seen as a something that it's commodifiable, and it's also part of the way we communicate when we're texting and in social media.
Yeah, and I mean it even goes I mean obviously with certain songs, I get that, but I mean even with sort of singers now, I mean one of my not really something I should admit on a podcast, I'm going to get absolutely hammered for this. One of my favorite bands is Pink. And I love Pink, but she doesn't use an I, she uses an exclamation mark. But the thing is, no one ever looks at it and goes, oh, that's P and K. Do you know what I mean? Everyone knows it's Pink, and it's like that sort of thing. And then you look at I don't know if it's more prevalent in sort of the rap industry, but you've got like Lil Wayne, Snoop Dogg, things like that, where it's everything's spelt slightly different. And I don't know if that's part of that sort of genre of music, or whether it's just again linked to this, but no one's ever questioned
I
why.
think that there are certain genres of music that try to buck tradition more than others. So if you can set yourself apart from the crowd by misspelling your the name or using an exclamation mark or a dollar sign like ASAP Rocky or Kesha, you're not only saying I'm different, you're also saying I don't really care for I don't really care what the system is telling me I should spell like. I'm going to spell the way I want. It's part of my identity, and it's almost, I may be reading into it, but it's almost a repudiation of just the traditional educational landscape, saying that I can express myself better by playing with the very fundamentals of language.
No, I totally agree. I have got one question that I've read through it and I really still can't understand. And you've called it the sheer absurdity of the anti-absurd alphabet. And for the life of me, it makes absolutely no sense to me whatsoever as to why this even was put forwards. But can for the you know for the people listening who probably I'm going to guess haven't heard of this, can you explain a little bit more about that?
So 1845, a man named Bartolini Beniowski, he came up with a system of simplified spelling that transformed all English letters into numbers. So the way it works is first he would reduce a word to its dominant consonants. So if you take a word like paper, first he would reduce it to the letters PPR, because from those letters you can still understand what you're spelling. You're spelling paper, it's just without the vowels. Then he would take those letters and bring them over to a number grid, numbered 0 through 9, with each number corresponding to two or three letters. And he would find the corresponding number for those letters. So PPR turns into 994. A word like father turns into 814. And you could, in this way, reduce an entire book down to probably 20 or 30 pages. And you could also, it was kind of the most mathematized scientific version of spelling that, in his mind, made a lot of sense. To us, it sounds absurd. And the irony is, he named this alphabet the anti-absurd alphabet, and he called all his followers anti-absurdists, and he urged them all to spell anti-absurdly. I mean, this is one of these guys that he was a blip in history. God, he it never caught on, and it never was going to, and it's unclear whether he ever thought it would, but there's good reason to believe that he thought he was doing a great service to the way we communicate. And should it had it have caught on, maybe communication would be not only simpler but clearer, easier. I don't know, who knows what he really had in mind, but I know that he didn't like the letters we were using.
No, and I tried to understand it, and the way you've explained it there makes a little bit more sense. But yeah, I mean, it was never going to cotton on, and I can't imagine it would work in text, like in actual speaking terms. So it was purely just a way of simplifying written word, I'm guessing.
Know what I think of it now is, it's almost like binary code for computers. It's computers. It would make sense to a computer. And maybe he was just thinking like a future computer.
I suppose I suppose on that basis, he's probably hundreds of years ahead of his time, isn't he, really?
Exactly.
So obviously we've got the book. The book's called Enough is Enough, spelt differently, well, spelt normally, and then enough as in how we would spell it, Enough, and then is enough, Enuf. Am I right?
That's correct.
Lovely. So the book is available, as far as I can tell, in April. Was it the 15th of April?
April 15th, which for Americans is tax day, so you can use your rebates.
Well, hopefully you're getting a good one now. Now you've got Elon Musk sorting out the taxes.
Yeah, if you can use your entire check to buy out all your bookstores, my book, I think a good thing.
I think that's definitely worth doing. So I mean, it did throw me a little bit because I was sort of thinking there isn't 15 months in the year because the date I've got through is 4/15/25. I've just literally just recorded an episode with my dad about the War of Independence and July the 4th. And I sort of he made the point. He said, "How come that the 4th of July is the only date in American history where they pronounce it correctly?" He said, and I was like, "Oh, do you know what? I've never really thought about that." He says, "You know, Christmas is December 25th, and New Year's Day is January 1st, and September 11th is September 11th." And he said, "But yet the 4th of July is the 4th of July." And he said, "I've never understood why that is that way." So when I read it and I thought 4/15, I thought there's not 15 months, and then I had to realize that obviously it's back to front. But yeah, I mean it's obviously it's going out on sale then, so we are going to hold the release date of this. So I do normally put these episodes out on Patreon first, so the Patreon will probably be a couple of weeks earlier. So if anyone is listening to it on Patreon, you're going to have to wait to buy the book. Well, I'm assuming it's available on pre-order.
Pre-order. Yep,
Yeah,
that'll be the first
pre-order.
one. And then it'll arrive in your at your home on the 15th.
Yeah, I mean that sounds fantastic. I mean, to be honest, I've got the PDF, but if it's on sale in the UK, I will be buying this because I think I'm not very good with PDFs. So reading it on like a because I read everything on my mobile phone, so reading it on a small screen doesn't work for me very well. So you will definitely have one order from the UK that will be coming through.
All right, you'll be the one.
Well, no, do you know what? I hopefully, like I said, people listening to this and like I said, we do have sort of 10%. I've got roughly 5,000 listeners a week, so you're talking sort of around 500 people from the UK that do listen. So there should be a few on there that will, and I'm sure there will be some who look at this and go, "Yeah, I want to know," because I do get a lot of questions when it comes to spelling and when it comes to things, because we have certain towns in this country which you may or may not have heard of. So we've got one town in this country, it's called Toaster. And that is spelt TOWCESTER. We have a town called Bister, which is spelt BISCESTER.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So when people do sort of think, you know, they talk about things in this country, and I mean, one of the most famous towns in this country is Leicester, and even that's spelt LEICESTER.
Right.
And when you explain that to Americans, and I've done it before with people that I speak to regularly, and said, "Oh, how would you pronounce that?" And they're like Leicester, and I'm like, "No, it's Leicester." And they're like, "Well, why is there a C and an I in it?" And so we have,
That'll have to be the that'll have to be the subject of my next book.
yeah, honestly, it'd be brilliant, and I'm more than happy to give you any input because we have really, really weird spellings over here, for towns. So, and we have some great town names as well. I mean, I know the one that always baffles me in America is Albuquerque. That really, I never
Does
understood.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one that I never give a second thought to.
Yeah.
I could spell it. I mean, I'm not from anywhere near Albuquerque, but I think I could give it a pretty good shot. I think I could get 95% of it spelled right.
I just don't
But it.
understand it in comparison to all the other names. I mean, you've got Birmingham, London. You've got all of our names, and then there's that just one from a Scrabble board that someone's, you know. But no, I mean we've got some great names over here. I mean, my favorite town is actually in Birmingham. It's called Bellend. I mean, that's just quality. It's just a great
You
name
spell
for it.
that.
Bell, BELLEND.
Oh, easy.
Which probably doesn't mean much to Americans, but in Eng there'll be English people absolutely wetting themselves at that because it's a really bad insult over here. So you'll have to Google that when we finish, is what does that mean? But yeah, there's literally a town called that, so there's some great ones. So yeah, if you ever need any input on another on some British stuff, let me know. But yeah, thank you very much for joining us, Gabe. I really, really appreciate it. So yeah, hopefully we'll hear from you in the future.
Thank you so much, Dan. It was a
No
pleasure.
problem. Thanks a lot. Have a good evening.
Take care.
If you're looking for legit ways to make extra money, you've got to check out The Side Hustle Show. With hundreds of actionable episodes to choose from, you'll learn what's working now from real people making real money, like the Utah mom who built a six-figure business playing video games, or the guy earning $3,000 a month renting out mobility scooters. Online or offline, from Amazon to your own hometown, from YouTube to vending machines, The Side Hustle Show has you and your wallet covered. Subscribe to The Side Hustle Show wherever you're listening to this podcast and increase your earning power today.